Good morning, everybody. It is good to see you this morning. Thanks for coming and hanging out with us as we, I guess we're wrapping up. Is this the end of the holiday season? Is that what this is? Is this the official end? Like, who goes back to work tomorrow for the first time in, like, forever? That's me, too. I guess I'm at work today, aren't I? It depends on if you call this work or not. But anyway, I am here, so I guess I'm at work. See, I'm still struggling to get back. How many of you go back to school tomorrow? Okay, a couple more go back on Tuesday, I think, and the rest of you is like, don't make me raise my hand. I feel like I'm already in school, and I don't want to go back. But anyway, hey, it's good to see you. Hey, instead of sharing with somebody next to you what your resolutions are, I want to do something a little different. Is that all right? Do a little different? I think we've got to start 2015 off a little different this year. Instead of you revealing your resolutions, you're going to give the person next to you a resolution, all right? So you're just going to look at them. You're going to come up with something good real quick. As I'm talking, I'm stalling. You're going to find something fun, exciting, not serious, because we don't want it to turn into a fight in here today. And I have a resolution for you. Here it is. Ready, set, go. How brave are you? Go ahead. Give them a resolution. Try it. This is even fun if you don't know the person next to you. I just saw that right here. This is good. Has that ever happened to you before? Somebody walked up to you and go, hey, I have a resolution for you. This could get dangerous, couldn't it, husbands and wives? God, I got some people are sitting next to their parents. That's why you don't sit next to your parents during church, man. I mean, you just don't do that. I mean, because you know mama's going to give you something. I mean, she already had 10 ready. Whoop, here's my list. There it is. Yeah. Well, y'all are having too much fun with that. That's enough. Okay, stop that. So is it better to do that with somebody that you know or somebody that you don't know? Actually, is it safer? It's actually safer to do it with somebody you don't know. Because, I mean, it's just a random, you know, shot in the dark about, you know, what they need to change or what needs to be better or what, you know, especially if you're going after the weight thing, you know. Did anybody tell, gosh, I hate to say this, did anybody tell somebody else they need to lose weight? Are you serious? She told you? God, Mom, we need to talk, you know? God, that's ugly. Golly. But anyway, no guys did that, right, fellas? Right, fellas? Yeah. Yeah, because then the whole resolution thing would change real quick, wouldn't it, fellas? So it happens every year. There's this talk, this conversation. Media helps us, obviously. Social media definitely helps us. There's this conversation of what we need to do better, what needs to be different, how we can be healthier, how we can be smarter, how we can be richer, how we can do better with our time and our money. It's every year. We know that. I mean, I don't remember the first time, in, you know, as a kid growing up that, you know, there was a serious conversation about making resolutions. But it just seems like it's always been there. And we humans do this. We make goals to accomplish something beyond what we did the year before. Of course, there's the easy ones out there, and our world, especially the marketing world, picks this up. I mean, have you seen how many weight loss commercials are on TV right now? You can't watch football, right? For the weight loss commercials. I mean, like, I feel guilty eating my nachos, you know? I hate that, you know? But so, yeah, it's everywhere. Of course, there's other things that are kind of marketed towards us at this time of year, to do better at this and to do better at that and to start the new year off right. And I even had a few of you, I ain't calling you out from the stage, but you know who you are, saying, look, I'm starting the new year off right. I'm at church, right? And so, you know, I guess we have that in our mindset that we're supposed to do something new, do something different, do something better. We have these ideas in our minds that are impressed upon us, and sometimes we own them enough. Sometimes we're brave enough to actually commit to one, right? Let's just do a show of hands. How many? Come on, let's be confessional. Let's start the year off confessing something, right? How many of you are actually committing to some kind of resolution this year? Raise your hand. All right. Okay. All right. I just need to know who I need to pray for. All right. Yeah, I see that hand. Okay. Cool. All right. Yeah, so, yeah. You know, it's interesting. I read an article the other day, and of course, I've said for years that the enemy of my life is an article that my wife has read, right, fellas? So anyway, but I read an article the other day about the impact of one Coke over the next 2 hours, what it does to your body. So am I brave enough to say I won't drink a Coke in 2015, any kind of soda? You know, actually, I can say to you that would make a difference for me. It would. It would, but I don't drink near as much Coke as I do coffee. So if you said that I was going to cut coffee out for the year 2015, I'd say you're crazy. Ain't happening. Say you got issues and I ain't going that far. I am not that committed. Now, cutting Cokes, okay, I can do that. I could, and I'm going to try because I read the article and it's not good. It's not pretty at all. But I will tell you, there's no article about coffee that you could put in front of me that's going to make it like a difference. Not one. Because I'm committed to drinking coffee every morning. I even upped the ante over Christmas. I got a coffee grinder. I've always made fun of people that have coffee grinders. I've got a coffee grinder now. I guess I'm a true coffee snob now. It's way better. I never thought it was better, but it is better. So you're never going to get me to quit that. But I'm going to try the Coke thing because I'm comfortable with that. It's a goal that I can do. It's a goal that I should do. You know these proverbial carrots in front of us? You know what I'm talking about? That take us down this road, that shift us in action, maybe shift some other things in our bodies. But it all starts with a mind shift, doesn't it? Like, am I really going to commit to this, or is it just a good idea? Is this something that I'm, you know, like, sold to doing because it defines who I am and what I believe? Or is it just like, yeah, I'm going to do my best? It's these carrots out there that help us kind of think and about the directions and the actions that we do. And for the record, I'm not against them. I'm not against, you know, resolutions or goals or I'm not against something that makes us better or makes you better or helps us to do, to be different people than what we, what's the easy way out. I'm not. But I do have a significant problem with most resolutions, including my own, including the one I just confessed. It is so easy to make resolutions or commitments or even goals that are focused on earthly things. It's easy. Our world enforces it and empowers it. The articles are all about them, you know? And they are so, most goals, most resolutions are so earthly driven. Again, it's not that they're innately evil, but I do think it's interesting how much time, money, effort, thought process, things that we watch and listen to are consumed by earthly resolutions, especially this time of year. You know, as I think about that, I can't remember a resolution outside of saying, I remember early in my walk with the Lord saying, hey, I'm going to read the whole Bible in 1 year. I remember making that goal 1 year as a New Year resolution. And I did it. Had to catch up a lot at the end, but I did it. But most of my resolutions are very historically, very earthly based. How about yours? Any heavenly resolutions this year? Any new ideas that didn't come from you, but came from spending a little time with the Lord and the Lord going, excuse me. Yeah, that 10 pounds, yeah, that's nice, but that 10 pounds ain't going to make the heaven anyway. Let's talk about something more impactful, something more lasting. Let's talk about eternally shifting your thoughts, Brian, to me and to what a real prayer life would be like. Let's shift our thoughts from how to save more money to how to build up a treasure in heaven forever. What would shift for you if we went to that kind of resolution making? What would change? If you're using the Bible app, I give you some options of not just about resolutions on there, but some ways to take some notes. And I encourage you actually this year, maybe it's a spiritual resolution for you, to write down some notes, because you're going to hear this word shift a lot in 2015 out of my mouth. Okay, because I would say to you that not just we as individuals, but even corporately, even as a church body, even as friends, many of us know each other in friendships, and we hang out together, and we do community groups together, and we do ministry items together. And I would say to you that most of us, if not all of us, need to have a shift in our lives. Now, I can't sit there and tell you what your shift needs to be, because frankly, if I did, like y'all just attempted to do a while ago, you know, you kind of go, oh, that's nice. You don't really know about what shift I need in my heart and in my mind and in my soul, do you? Now, you may sit there thinking of, sure, I wish this guy was a better speaker. Maybe you are. Maybe you're sitting there thinking, I wish he was at least shorter. I'm working on that one. I'll tell you about that in a minute. And maybe there's some other things that you would say, if you know me very well, that some things that might ought to change. So be it. But let's just be honest about you. You're just another human being, aren't you? So am I. So I could sit here, and for y'all that I do know personally, I could say, all right, Tony, here's a couple things you need to change in your life. Tony, that's what you get for sitting close to me, all right? So you know, I could do that. Now, I know Tony enough to know a few things that might be good suggestions, but I'm a human. Here's the real deal. If you want lasting, truly impactful, life-changing things in your life that isn't just about throwing a dart at some random cosmic dartboard, spend some time with the Lord this week and ask Him. Let Him speak to your mind and your heart and your soul about what real resolutions that are eternally based look like. What if all of our resolutions were connected to the kingdom of heaven instead of some kind of earthly metric that fades with decades and centuries? What if? What if that the goals that we are setting, and again, I'm not saying that they're all evil. I just say they're short-sighted. What if they are long-term? What if they made a difference instantly now, but they made a difference this time next year and long term in your relationship with your husband or your wife? What if they made a change, a giant shift in the way you parent? What if the concept of the goals of what to buy and what to own this year came from the voice of God in your head and in your heart instead of what you saw in a piece of paper on a Sunday afternoon when you have time to look? I mean, let's be honest about what we're faced with. We can, by all means, based on human freedom and human will, and I appreciate Alan's speaking about the understanding of who sets real goals and the concept of God being totally in charge that he had the conversation last week with you if you were able to be here. But unless we check into that, unless we choose to listen to the voice of God, unless His heart is in tune with our hearts, unless our minds are changed, they're shifted to what He thinks, let's just be honest, it's just going to be short term. Not going to last very long. I'm not trying to be a downer here today, but let's just be honest about it. Most of us, even in our earthly resolutions, we don't keep them. I don't know what the standard is. I would guess a couple of weeks to a couple of months, right? Most people that do the whole weight loss thing or being healthier talk about it's like the 3 month. If you can get past March, right? And most don't make it there. And I would say to you, part of that is because of it's earthly based. Again, not that they're all bad or evil. If you want to be stronger, if you want to be healthier, if you want to be smarter, if you want to speak another language this year, cool. Go after that stuff. There's nothing evil or wrong with that. But be very careful that you don't forget about eternity. What kind of goals would you have? What kind of resolutions, what kind of change in mindset would you have if you were really trying to store up treasure in heaven? I will confess to you again, I feel like we've been duped, fooled. I'm even going to use the word deceived by the things of this earth and the human perspective of not just earthly dreams, but the good old American dream. Now, I'm as much of an American as anybody in the room, and I'm proud of my country. I'm thankful for the history and the legacy that we've been given. I would never use this stage at all to talk about politics or down leaders or any of those kinds of things. I don't do that. And if you've ever been around LifePoint, you know I don't do that. But here's the deal. If we just keep settling for what our world, our country, and the materialistic ways that they've been given to lead us, to guide us, we will end up absolutely no different than the exact same things that they treasure. I fear something. I fear that the metrics that are the norm for our world, whether it's how many people are in this room, let's just be honest about church life, to how much money we have in the bank, to what our buildings or our cars look like, or our houses for that matter. The metrics that are measured in our world, in newspapers and on social media, is all about the earthly resolutions and goals. They're consumed by that. I fear that these metrics, called more, has filled our minds with self-serving motivations, and we can miss the things of God and the things of His kingdom. What should we do? How should we think in light of this person named Jesus that we just spent several weeks celebrating His birth? And that here in a few months, we'll talk about His death. So is that the cycle that we really want to get stuck in? Let's talk about Him being born. Let's talk about Him dying. And that's a good thing to talk about. They are good things to talk about. But what about their impact on us, but not just for a few weeks out of the year, a few months out of the year, but for all 12 months, for all 300 and ever how many days it is? It's a whole bunch. What about today? Why is today any different than December 25th? Why is this Sunday any different than Easter Sunday? And it's the reality is we've allowed this world to structure those days as more important. Instead of saying, hey, Lord, today is the day that You have made. Today I will, what's the word? Rejoice and be what? Glad in it. Well, y'all know that verse. Let's live that verse. Let's have a new set of metrics that are not from me. They're not even from you. And hey, guess what? Not from the person next to you either. But it's the Lord speaking to you about new metrics, new concepts about your money, new concepts about your weight, new concepts about your house and your cars and where you're going to go and what you're going to do and how much time you're going to spend at work, fellas, and how much time you're going to spend hanging out with other people and not your spouses and how much time you're going to invest in other people in your community or in the church. Let's talk about how God's goals and metrics could change things. Now, there's a couple set of scriptures that we're going to refer to this year quite a bit. And one of them is a conversation that happened a little past halfway that Jesus had with not just His followers, but the crowd that was following. If you know much about the three or so years that Jesus, that we read about in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, that walked this earth and that did ongoing ministry. And he started it out basically as pursuing a handful of guys, 12 guys we know as the disciples. In the midst of that, he spent some time teaching and preaching. We obviously know he did an incredible amount of healings. He cast out a lot of demons. There were some incredible miracles that he did, feeding massive amounts of people, 5,000, 20,000 people at one time. We know he hung out and had dinner and lunch and probably even breakfast with people that the religious crowd hated. They mocked him for those kinds of things. He had ongoing verbal sparring with the most religious people of his day. And I'll just admit to you that if Jesus physically was here today with skin on like he was when we're about to read this conversation out of Luke chapter 9, I would tell you that I think he would have verbal sparring with most Christians and Christian leaders of our day too. I just do. I just don't think he would live like a lot of us live. I don't think he would own what a lot of us own. I just don't. I don't think he would spend his time and his money, whatever money he had, on the things that we spend time and money on. I think it would be a drastic shift if we walked with him and hung out with him for 3 years. The shift would be so massive just to be with him, much less assume his way of thinking. So about a little bit past halfway, he's having a conversation with the disciples. And it was a clarifying conversation, holistically, the whole conversation, if you read all of Luke 9. It was about his crucifixion. It's coming. I'm about to die. In the next year, a little bit more, I am going to give my life up for what I believe in. This wasn't a resolution. It wasn't a goal. It was a fact. He knew it. It was going to happen. Was it a struggle? Absolutely. Was it a daunting reality? Absolutely. Was his humanity as real as yours and mine and struggles of the day? Absolutely. But he knew without a shadow of a doubt he would have to give his life up for us. In the midst of that conversation, he's having with the disciples, because not all the crowd got that, he turns to the crowd and says this. Now, I want you to hear this. This is to all of humanity. This was to the crowd that came for the miracles. This was to the crowd that came to church on Sunday mornings, whether it was once a year or every Sunday. This was the crowd that was all about the dog and pony show called Jesus. What do I get out of being around him? And here's what he says to them. If any of you wants to be my follower, if that's your goal, if that's your desire, if in the midst of your thought processes about life, if you want to follow me, here's what you got to do. You've got to turn from your selfish ways. To follow Jesus requires turning from selfish ways. You have to take up your cross daily. Now, has Jesus died on the cross yet? No, right? He's obviously speaking here. So, he's already predicted that he would die. He didn't say that he would die on a cross. He just said he'd die. So, do you think that this conversation came back to the crowd when they see Jesus hanging on a cross, you know, about a year or so later? You bet. They're saying he's predicting for them what they're going to think and what they're going to believe at the moment of seeing Jesus on the cross. But they knew what the cross meant. The cross meant picking up a sacrificial lifestyle, that it's not about me. Picking up a cross means that it's going to cost me everything. Picking up a cross means that it's not about my life, but it's about my death. So that's probably not real exciting to the crowd. Let's just be honest. But what about this year? You got any goals that you want to die more? No. We want to prolong our life more. Right? Our goals are about life. He's saying, let's talk about your death. So here he says, why don't you pick up your cross every day? Every day you die a little bit more to yourself. Every day you wake up and make it more about somebody else or about something else. And in the midst of that, you follow me. You make a goal of following him every day. Not just knowing about him, not just singing about him, not just thinking about him, not just worshiping him, but following him. If you try to hang on to your life, he says, hey, crowd, the more you try to hang on, the more you're going to lose. The more frustrated you're going to be with these human goals and metrics. The more you hang on, the more you try to get, the more you think that this will make you happy and this will give you a better life and this will be better for your kids and your grandkids, the more trophies you try to win, guess what? The more empty you will be. But if you give up your life, for the specific reason of what? Read the next three words. For my sake. Not just to be some martyr. Not just to say I'm better than the heathens of this world or of this country or of this community. Not just for saying I have the moral absolutes and you have the moral wrongs. It's not about being morally right. It's about following him. and about giving up your life for his sake, then you'll save it. Then you'll understand peace and joy. And it's not even about happiness, but it's about satisfaction in life. By the way, what do you benefit, he says, if you gain the whole world, but are yourself lost or destroyed? If you gain all the things that's in your earthly resolutions, at the end of the day, the end of the year, at the end of the decade, when you're on your last bed, taking your last breath, are those resolutions going to matter? If anyone is ashamed of me, he says. Ooh. The ante is raised here, I believe. You're talking about death, but then you're talking about a moment that he's predicting again that he's going to be on a cross. And if anyone's ashamed of me and my message, the Son of Man will be ashamed of that person when he returns in his glory and the glory of the fathers and the holy angels. Do you not think that the disciples, after they scattered when he was crucified, didn't remember this sentence? Am I ashamed of him or not? So here's the real question for us. I know we're sitting in a comfortable seat on a church and at a church in good old East Texas, America, with all of our freedom, without little judgment for saying we're Christians or believers or godly people or worshipers or whatever. We have probably zero criticism of that for that, unless you throw something out on Facebook and somebody, you know, gets back and forth with you. But let's be honest. It's easy being a Christian here, right? It's almost too easy. Have you ever thought about how easy it is? It's too easy. Do we have to stand up for anything? No. I mean, and most people standing up for something around here, it's a moral debate versus the people that don't believe in certain things or they live morally different than we do. But what's our real stand? What's our real sacrifice? And let's just make it very specific. What's our real cross to bear? Because that's about sacrifice, friends. That's about not getting, but giving. You know, in the midst of this bigger conversation about the sacrificial death that's coming in Jesus' life, we've got to understand some big shifting words here. It's out of his own mouth, directed to all of us, including in the masses. In the midst of that conversation is this word shame. That if we're ashamed of following Jesus on a daily basis, if we're ashamed of not living like him in the midst of no matter who's there, or what day it is, or what piece of property we're on, or what we do with our lives, it's that understanding that we're following him, we're with him, and he's with us. You know, the account of this same story in Matthew added what happened next. It's really interesting. You know how sometimes you make a resolution and within like an hour, you know, it's like tempting to fail? Anybody else? You know, like how I say no Cokes and the very next commercial I see is for Dr. Pepper? You know, because, man, Dr. Pepper's good stuff. Maybe made in heaven even, right? Just kidding about that, but it's Texas I love. But anyway, close enough, right, for all you Texans. But let's be honest, it's tempting instantly. We're challenged and tested instantly. Guess what happens to the boys that follow Jesus? They hear this sacrificial mindset conversation about picking up your own cross. And it's an interesting thing that happens. Matthew 14, it says, immediately Jesus made the disciples to get in the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. And after he dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside over there by the Sea of Galilee. He goes up on a mountain by himself to pray. It's the same mountain that looks over the valley where he fed 5,000 plus. And there's a great Sea of Galilee, and he sends the boys off to the sea. He takes care of the crowd. He sends them off. He goes up to the mountain to pray. Okay? After he dismissed them, he went to pray, to spend time with the Lord, to hear the voice of his Father. And evening came. He was there all alone. But the boat was already a considerable distance from the land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. So a storm came in. And you may not know much about the Sea of Galilee, but when a storm comes in there, boy, it's rocking, okay? And so this great wind comes down, and during the fourth watch, so it's in the middle of the night, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake, walking on the water. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen anybody walk on the water. Personally, I've not. Now, I saw a guy one time take a big disc and put it in the water. Some of y'all know who I'm talking about. And take a stool and put the stool on top of that disc and ride that stool behind a boat on water. That's about the closest I've ever seen anybody walking on water. Now, I know there's some guys in here that can do some amazing things with pieces of wood on their feet in water. I get that, right? But they have a motor pulling them, okay? This was Jesus on his own free will in the middle of a storm, walking on the waves like it's no big deal. So, he comes up to the disciples, and just imagine yourself on the boat. Just put yourself there for a second. When the disciples saw him walking on the water, on the lake, they were utterly, utterly freaked out. Okay, that's my version of that. They were terrified. Of course they were terrified. Now, they seen Jesus do a lot of stuff. Healings, feeding, blah, 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 blah. But not walk on water. Here he is walking on the water. So this is the law of the first occurrence here. They see somebody walking on water. You would freak out too. They're freaking out. Here he is. It's a ghost. They cried out in fear. They're yelling. They're saying, oh God, help us. This thing's going to kill us. What's on the water? And Jesus immediately says to them, take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid. Yeah, right. I'm in the middle of a storm out in the middle of the lake, and I think I'm going to drown, and here something is walking on the water. I'm going to be afraid, Jesus. Hey, look, I don't know what your storm is this year. I don't know about you. I had enough of them last year. Anybody signed up for no storms for this year? Is that your goals? Good luck with that one. All right. Not trying to be a downer. Just saying. Storms come, do they not? Almost every year. I don't know what your storm will be, but boy, it sure would be nice seeing Jesus walk on the water in the midst of them. So here he's come to give us peace, not scare us. And he says, take courage. It's me. Take courage. Take courage in the midst of the storm. It's me, Jesus says. Hey, Lord, if it's you, Peter says, if it's you, don't just announce that it's you. Don't just walk on the water and do a little dance out there. If it's you, bring me out there with you. Now, instantly, I'm impressed by Peter. Are you? Has Peter ever walked on water? No, he's never seen Jesus walk on water. So he's been scared with the other guys, and all of a sudden, he doesn't just want to see Jesus do a dance out there on the water. He wants to walk out there with him. So he says, hey, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come out to you on the water. So what does Peter have? He believes that Jesus is in control of not just the waves, but all of the situation. So he's trusting in Jesus. Are you with me? So here he is in verse 29. Come, Jesus says. He trusts Jesus' one word answer. Come. He gets out of the boat. Can you imagine the first step? He steps on the water, he doesn't go under, and here he is walking on water with Jesus. That's incredible in so many levels, in so many ways. We go through these storms, we face these storms, we trust in Jesus, we have faith in Jesus. We believe what we're doing is right, we listen to his voice, we have peace and assurance. So he starts walking on the water. Verse 30, changes very quickly. It's almost like the next day after making a resolution, right? When he saw the wind, it's like you get out there, you're doing your best, and here comes the wind. Boom. He begins to sink. He's afraid. He cries out, Lord, save me. Immediately, Jesus responds. Reaches down with his hand. He catches him, and he says, oh, you of little faith. Didn't say no faith. Oh, ye of little faith. Why you doubt? I'm not Jesus. I don't have his cool voice. I'm sure it's a lot deeper than mine. Less nasal, at least. But can you imagine him speaking to you? Why do you have doubts? Why do you have such little faith? Don't you know when you're following me, I'm with you? Take courage. I'm walking on water and you're with me. I don't know what that means for you. I don't know what that would mean, how it would change your resolutions if we lived by faith. Let's just admit this. Consider that Peter had the faith to, one, request to be with Jesus. Two, step out of the boat. Three, walk on water towards Jesus. An incredible moment for Peter, especially with all the other guys in the boat going, wow, that worked. That's pretty cool. What a sign of trust and determination to be with Jesus. Here's the question. Why lose faith? Why? You know what it was? It says it right there in the Word. He was distracted by the winds and the waves. Can we all admit something today? Would you be willing to confess this with me? That it's so easy to get distracted and lose focus on where the power to accomplish anything comes from? We think it's about our own power. Can we also admit the human will comes and goes fairly easily? But the will of God, the determination, the power of God in us could change everything. What are your waves and winds? What distracts you from fixing your eyes, focusing your heart, setting your mind on Jesus every moment of every day? You've got to recognize the enemy's efforts to be prepared for the attacks and the sneaky distractions that he uses to diminish your faith. He's got many. Life is full of them anyway. On top of that, you have an enemy seeking to kill and steal and destroy you. And if you don't think that he can't come and own your soul, at the very least, he will distract your mind and consume it with the things of this earth, like annual resolutions that eternally don't matter. 2 Corinthians 5, short little verse. We live by faith, not by sight. True or not true? Oh, y'all are chickens, aren't you? So am I. I mean, let's just confess right here. Live by faith, not by sight. Do we believe that? I'd say we probably believe it. Living by it is another thing, right? Living by faith. What kind of goals would change? Paul also challenged the early church with this same message that Jesus began in his conversation about the cross. In Colossians 3, he says, "Since then you have been raised with Christ, set your hearts on things above where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above and on earth and not on earthly things, for you died. Your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you'll also appear with him in glory." So get your mind set on glory, not on stuff, not on here, not on now. I know we have to live in the now. But if our minds set on eternity, I think the way we live in the now would probably shift. Everything shifts when we live by faith and not by sight. Everything shifts. A chapter that we're going to get real familiar with over the next few months is 2 Corinthians 5. So you can read ahead and read ahead and keep reading ahead. Keep just cycling that through, because I'll tell you later on in that same chapter that it says we live by faith and not by sight. In verse 15, it says, "He died for everyone so that those who receive his new life will no longer live for themselves. Instead, they shift. They live for Christ who died and was raised for them." See, would you be willing, just a question for you today. Would you be willing to make it your 2015 resolution? You ready for this one? To not live for yourself. That's a different kind of resolution. Don't live for myself. You know what's an interesting thing when you say that? Instantly you start thinking about, well, what do I live for? Have you noticed that? If I don't live for myself, if I don't live for all the self-driven goal things, what do I instantly fill in that blank with? What's the word? What is it? Others. I live for others. Now, who are the others? Sure, there are priorities. Yes, the Lord. Absolutely. And his Savior. But who else? Sure, there are people in your home that you better prioritize over, you know, the random person on the street. I get that. But does the random person on the street matter? At least the Lord, he does. if we live by faith? What fears control us? What doubts control us? What consumptions control us if we live by faith, not by sight? It's interesting if you read on, verse 16. So we have stopped evaluating others from a human point of view. Let's do that one more time. So we stop evaluating others from a human point of view. At one time, we thought of Christ merely from a human point of view. Paul confesses this. We just thought he was another teacher, another preacher, just another guy on stage saying, be better, do it right, go to God, quit being that kind of way, do's and don'ts kind of guy. But now we don't. However, how differently we know him now. You know how you can really shift? This is the only way you'll shift, is how well you know him. You know him well, I would bet you're willing to shift. You don't know him very well, you'll just try harder. This means that anyone who belongs to Christ has become a new person, new creature. The old life is, what's the word? Oh, come on, participate. The old life is what? Gone. Gone? Gone. Like 2014 is gone. Like Frank Sinatra is. Like Elvis and his mom is. Any Switchfoot fans in the room? Gone. I could keep going, but you've got enough. I love the song. It's a great one. Check it out. Gone. Old is gone. New has come. New. New life. Not that you made, that he's making in you. New life begins when we choose to live by faith in him. And that faith shifts our daily attention on Jesus and living out his sacrificial love towards others. Get used to this sentence, my friends. I could say to you all day long that I need a shift, and I would be telling you the truth. I won't tell you that you need a shift, except for I know the human condition that lives in you. I know it pretty well. You probably need a shift too. I'm going to say this too. Our church needs to shift. Just going to say it. There's no doubt in my mind. If we truly live by faith and not by sight, we need to shift. As a body, we need to shift. I think we must shift our focus on living out what is sacred to him and not just define faith and worship on our terms. You'll notice a little insert into your connection guide today, and you'll notice that there is a shift in schedule coming, not next Sunday, but the Sunday after. I'm going to ask everyone here, I realize there's a few visitors here, I get that, but I'm going to ask all LifePoint people to understand that if relationships really matter, then this won't be a problem. Not because I said so, but because when I look at Acts chapter 2 and Acts chapter 4, they didn't do church like we do church. They didn't walk in, grab a cup of coffee and a few snacks and sit down by ourselves and hope that we can sneak out without anybody consuming too much time, because pregame is starting. Let's just be honest. No offense, fellas, but we got to live different than that. We're not just thinking about the food or the schedule or the to-do list, ladies. I'm sorry. It's got to be more than that. We're not just talking about homework. I know there's more homework, or whatever, you know, fun we're going to have later on tonight or next week or whatever it is, kids, teenagers, college students. I get it. We all have stuff to do. I get it. We all have places to go. We all have things that we want to do, and we all want more sleep on Sundays. I get it. And I realize that this is messing with that. I do. Now, I'll say to you that we're going to shift some ways that I work too. This whole sermon thing will get shorter in 2 weeks. It's because we're going to have two. We're going to have one at 9:30. And then we're going to have, if you turn the page, we'll have one at 11:15. They're going to last 30 minutes and I'm going to be done. Okay? But I'm going to ask for some of that time to be spent hanging out and talking. So you'll notice, if you can get this out, a little white piece of paper, if you got one on your way in. You have an early option and a later option. We'll talk more about this next week and why we're doing this. I'm going to give you the why next week. So if you're going to walk out complaining without hearing the why next week, you're sinning, all right? Scripture says do everything without arguing or complaining. So I'm just quoting some scripture. Yeah, deal with that. Anyway, So there's an early option and a later option, and you can, you know, do whichever one you want. You can do an early sermon time. There's going to be a church-wide conversation time, and then there's going to be full church worship at 10:50. There's also going to be, if you flip the page to a later option, you'll see you'll be here for the conversation, then worship, and then a message. We will have all child care stuff in the later option. Okay, we won't have kids classes during the early sermon time. Okay, so we'll give more details about all of that. You can read through that. If you have questions, we're here going to be here to answer that over the next few weeks. It's an adjustment. And I recognize I'm actually asking you to spend time talking and listening and praying with other people. Here's why. Because you can't follow Jesus and not do that. You just can't. Now, you don't have to be like me at the front doors high-fiving 100, 200, 300 people every Sunday. I'm not telling you got to do that. Me and Mike and some others, we do that kind of stuff. You know who does that kind of stuff. But you can find one person. Talk, pray, listen to. Even if it's an old friend, brand new friend. We'll get into more of the whys again next week. But I'll just tell you, we believe that things have to shift. And if we're following Christ and we're living by faith and not by sight, and people matter more than things, then we've got to shift. But it has to start with us. Last thing I want to say today to you. If we just do a schedule change, or other shifts in the midst of, like, if we change our connection guide, which we're going to, you know, if some other things change, leadership or the way we do certain things, I get it. But I'll just tell you, whatever we do corporate change-wise, if you don't check into what the Lord wants you to do and listen to Him, the corporate stuff won't matter that much. So would you start off our first worship service time together and ask the Lord to speak to you individually about what it means to live by faith for you and not by sight. Father, we pray that it's your voice that would be remembered today, not mine. No offense to Leah's and the band, but God, thank you for their leadership and worship and their sacrifice to do so. But God, may it not be our voices that are remembered today. May it be yours. May it not be our own thoughts about what's going on at church or what's going on with my resolutions or even, you know, what's happening, you know, in the football games. That's coming later on. But as of right now, Lord, may the thing that be remembered, may the thing that change us, shift us, grow us, that takes old, dead things and makes them gone, is the voice of your Spirit speaking to our hearts and souls and minds. God, it's a bold prayer to say, shift us. It's even more bold to say, shift me. Shift my mind, shift my heart, shift my life. And may when others see me, they simply see you. May it not be about what I want, but, oh Lord, may it be about what you want. Would you just pause for just a second in the midst of the quiet and just ask the Lord to speak to you. Just ask Him. Be bold. Pray this prayer. Hey, Lord, speak to my heart. Give me eternal resolutions. Make me all new. And then ask the detail. Hey, Lord, what needs to shift in me?